This is Channel 2.
The Business Bunker with Paul Andrews.
Welcome back to the Business Bunker show here on Channel Radio in association with Biz Radio. You're listening to me, Paul Andrews, and the wonderfully gorgeous Amanda Flanders.
Hello.
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 What you got, Amanda?
What have I got? I have some emails. Shall I do another email?
Yeah,
okay, I'm quite into my emails today. I'm being more efficient at making sure I get through them all.
You're being efficient, are you?
That's what it is.
I'm glad to hear it.
It happens occasionally.
I beg your pardon?
I said it happens occasionally.
Does it?
Enterprise Nation, small business network and business support provider, and Salesforce, the global leader in CRM, have today launched an e-learning course to help SMEs improve their sales skills. The e-learning courses are part of the Schools of Sale program launched by Enterprise Nation and Salesforce in July 2021. The program. The program has helped 2,000 businesses to date, with the aim of supporting 10,000 small businesses by the end of January 2022. 2022, does it feel weird, like 2022?
Yes. Mm. 2021 didn't really happen.
No.
Well, 2020 didn't happen, didn't it?
The missing 2 years.
Yep.
Is that something we got there? Anyway, the free course consists of 5 modules delivered in bite-sized sections as part of the School of Sales program, designed to increase small businesses' knowledge of making sales. These 5 modules are: develop a sales mindset, get started with sales, make sales, share your business story, expand your sales, maximize your sales by getting customers to return, create an effective sales strategy. More information on the School of Sales program and access to the e-learning courses can be found at enterprisenation.com/School of Sales. Now, that's vital, isn't it? Absolutely vital, because one of the huge problems that a lot of people, especially small businesses that are set up, is they just don't understand they have to sell.
Absolutely, yeah. And none of us are salespeople, really.
Unless you're a salesperson.
Well, you run your own business, because you have to be.
Well, that's the point I was going to make. Is
natural salespeople.
Yeah. When you run your own business, you become a salesperson, and sometimes you don't even notice that you become a salesperson because you're passionate about what you do. Yeah. And therefore, when everybody else thinks you're selling, you just think you're explaining to people what it is you do. Yeah.
But having explained it, you've got to ask for the order. Mm. And so many people do the explaining and then wonder why they don't get any business. And it's because they've forgotten to ask for the order.
Exactly. Closing the sale.
Indeed.
Yeah, absolutely.
Selling 101.
Yeah. So on that note, why don't we actually talk to Simon? Let's officially talk to Simon now.
Oh, hi guys, I'm here really.
It's an absolute pleasure to welcome onto the show Mr. Simon Webster. Simon is from Talis Independent Financial Advisors.
That's right.
And he's very well known to us for all kinds of reasons. One, for many years on this very radio station, Simon did his own finance and money talk show.
I did indeed.
Yeah. And he's also the person that looks after all my finances too, which is why I'm broke. No.
It's why I don't have very much time, Paul, because looking after your finances is a full-time job.
Yeah, of course it is.
Counting your money.
Of course it is. Simon, it's a pleasure to see you. I invited you on the show for a number of reasons. One, I hadn't seen you for ages. Two, I thought it was really important that we talked about some finance issues. Three, that we've got a budget that's due tomorrow, is
Deep
it?
Joy.
Yeah.
Soon, yeah.
And also, of course, there's... We've gone through this 2 years almost of unprecedented nonsense about pandemics and closed downs and lockdowns and all the rest of it. And, of course, that's had a massive effect on business. We've got, you know, a debt time bomb about to explode under all of us. We've got loads of small businesses with massive amounts of debt that they've acquired over the last 2 years. You're my go-to man to explain finances and what's going on in the world. So I thought I'd get you on here and ask you what the hell's going on and how we're going to get out of this and what your thoughts on it all are.
And also, he doesn't know anyone else, though.
Yeah, I don't know anyone else anyway.
Well, that's a good friend. Real shame.
Yeah.
it's a challenge. I mean, the whole situation is completely unprecedented.
Yeah.
It's not. I mean, there was a massive global pandemic with the Spanish flu. I think it was the 1920s, wasn't it?
Yeah, yeah.
Around there, millions and millions of people died.
Yeah.
But governments were caught unawares, didn't know what to do, and didn't react. In our more linked society, because everybody's communicating with everybody else, there was a global reaction to COVID, which effectively started in China with lockdown. And as an authoritarian regime, they found it relatively easy to do, and their lockdown was spectacular. They had lots of police and soldiers and army, and they just said, you will not leave your house, full stop. And somebody will go in and get your shopping for you. You will not go out. And so we had lockdown light in the UK, and that was perceived as being the correct response. Whether or not it was is not really a financial conversation. I tend to think it possibly was, at least until the vaccine came out. Now that the vaccine is out, I am very hopeful that no further lockdowns will be necessary. We'll all get our booster shots and life can return to normal, as for many of us it sort of has. But there are still lots of people very worried about the fact that COVID is circulating and people are still dying from this disease. So it's a big issue.
All of that is fine and good and dandy.
I didn't answer the question, though, did I?
No. What I want to explore is this. You know, it's affected me. It's affected my businesses.
Yeah.
My businesses got absolutely decimated in the lockdown.
Lots of people did. It's terrible.
Yeah. And it's highlighted a number of issues for me. Some things you can't do anything about. So, for instance, I've had to shed lots of staff, and I've now got a very expensive office with nobody in it, and still 4 years to run on my lease. And, of course, my landlord lives on the money from his leases, so he's not letting me out of it because no one else is going to take it on. So you've got those kind of structural problems facing small businesses. But more than that, the thing that bothers me, and this is where I want your thoughts on where we go from here, a lot of small businesses were prevented from trading either fully or at least partly. So their business models have been poor. They've been offered loans and offsets of things like VAT and corporation tax that they could offset and delay their payments on. But at some point, all of that's got to be paid back.
And corporation tax is already going up.
Yeah.
Going up quite a lot.
Yeah.
So there are real... I mean, there is no easy answer to this. And the one thing that you've got to get out front and centre is governments do not have any of their own money.
Yeah.
Governments merely redistribute tax income.
Yeah.
So if there is a lockdown, government income goes down because people are paying less tax.
Yeah.
When there's a pandemic and they offer support programs, more money is going out, money they don't have, so they've had to borrow it. And at the end of the day, as every household knows, if you borrow more money at some point in time, you're going to have to repay it, unless you can make a successful claim that you were missold the loan in the first place, and then maybe sometimes you don't. But governments will find that one a very hard one to pull. So
could you imagine that?
Yeah.
Can you imagine the adverts? Yeah. Are you a government that was missold a loan by the Bank of England?
Yeah. Let us off. So effectively, this debt will have to be repaid. Now, it can be repaid over a long period of time. It's similar to the Second World War. It's worth saying that we're still paying off debt from the Second World War in this country right now. And in the States, the same thing. Huge, huge, huge mountains of debt. And there is a systemic problem in most advanced Western economies where the debt mountain that they are carrying is huge.
Yeah.
And the only way that debt mountain can be reduced, well, there's only two ways that that debt mountain can be reduced. One is governments increase tax. So they increase tax on private individuals, you and I, or on businesses. Oh, you and I again. And it's exactly the same thing. They've got to get their income to equal their expenditure. And the cost of the servicing of the debt is a huge extra cost they've got. The only other thing they can do is reduce expenditure. And reducing expenditure means cutting benefits or cutting government programs. And the big one they're being hammered for at the moment is taking off £20 off universal credit. Now, what all the people who are screaming about this have forgotten is that that was a £20 temporary increase in
uplift.
Universal credit. It was a temporary uplift, and it was always going to be taken away. Yeah. Oh, no, you are reducing universal credit by £20. No, we are taking back the uplift that we gave for a pandemic. Now, you can have a whole debate about whether benefits are sufficient and whether universal credit is adequate, and the answer is it probably isn't. But the object of the exercise is to get people back to work, which ought to pay. And that is the this sort of ever running balancing act that governments and politicians have to pay, balancing supporting people who can't work, who are being supported by people who are at work. And there is this balance. There's two lots of people. People who are net contributors to the Treasury and people who are net recipients.
Absolutely. The government obviously weren't aware of Frederick Hertzberg and his hygiene theories, were they? Which is, if you give someone something, even on a temporary basis, and then take it away, they get very upset. Yeah. So if you came along and gave a worker and you said to a worker, right, we're giving you a 10% pay rise, and then before you've even given them money, you said, oh, sorry, wrong worker, they actually get demotivated by the fact that you've taken away something that they didn't even have because you promised it. And that's a hygiene, you know, which is why when you give people pay rises, it's known as a hygiene theory. It's not a motivator. It can only become a demotivator if you take it away. And taking away the uplift was always going to happen, wasn't it?
There's a very similar theory in financial services called the perverse utility curve. It's a marvellous expression. Only financial people could come up with this sort of rubbish. But what it basically proves, and they proved it with a standard, with a test at MIT or one of the American universities, it had to be one of the American universities, people get more upset about losing a bit of money than they get excited about winning a bit more.
Yep.
And it's this balance, and it should be the mantra by which all financial advisors live. Don't take too much risk with clients' money so they get an extra point. They don't care about the extra percent.
Exactly. Yep.
What they care about is if you get an extra 2 or 3 points downside in pursuit of that extra point.
Yep.
And people hate that. So a lot of the business that we do at Talis is about trying to de-risk client investments.
It's something that amazes me. You know, my background was in banking, and I worked in investment banking. Albeit in technology. But one of the things that always never ceases to amaze me is how people panic when markets start to get hit. And people go, oh, we're going to lose money. If you don't sell, you're not. You know, if you just sit tight, and people try to unload at the, as a market plummets. And you think, why are you doing that? Why don't you just hang on?
I have a story that is a little bit visual, but I'm going to do it for the radio.
Yeah.
Which is, I'm holding in my hand, dear listener, a Samsung. It happens to be a Samsung smartphone.
Right.
In a fit of momentary insanity, I had the whole thing covered in platinum. My phone is now worth £100,000.
Right.
So here's a question: the price of platinum goes up. The phone is now worth £150,000. How much have I made?
Nothing.
I've made precisely nothing. Why? Because I haven't sold it. Because Paul knows this. Paul knows this. But you ask a number of people and they will say, I've made 50,000 quid.
Yeah.
You haven't made anything. All that's happened is a number on the valuation of my phone has changed from 100 to 150. I've made nothing. I've still got the same phone.
Yeah.
And it's the same with investments. I've still got the same investments. So if I had £150,000 worth of platinum phone and the platinum price halved, it's now worth £75,000, how much have I lost? Mm. Nothing. Why? Because I've still got the same phone. So the trick, as Paul exactly said, is you buy low, you sell high, and when you get a downward fluctuation in markets, hang on to it and don't let go. Which is why, and we're quite proud of this as a business, when markets all went very soft when COVID first hit and valuations all went down very quickly, very fast, we didn't get a single client phone us up saying, I'm worried I'm losing money. Because they've all heard this so many times.
Mm.
And now they're up 17% over the last 12 months. Now, they're 17% up from a low point, so it's, you know, it comes out in the wash. But the reality is, temporary market fluctuations are exactly what that.
Absolutely.
Exactly what they are, temporary fluctuations.
And don't even get me started on asset prices. I saw two things this
week. Can't tell how excited these two are having this conversation about money and finance. We're all right, Caroline. We'll just sit there and listen to it.
I think it's great what you're saying. And the same with property, isn't it?
Yeah.
It doesn't matter whether your property's gone up or down unless you sell it and
exactly.
want the money.
Yeah.
Well, this is actually, and thank you for the segue, because the reason there is more wealth stored in people's homes in the UK than in any other asset class is we have to buy the house and then we can't sell it because we live there. Mm. It's our home. So when market prices go up or market prices go down, we just sit there. And so the house that my parents bought for £9,000 50 years ago, or whatever it was, maybe slightly longer than 50 years, is now worth north of £1 million. Not because of anything clever they've done, but just because of the normal price of inflation over the years, and it's just gone up and up and up and up.
But I saw two things this week, though. One of them was just hilarious, because it shows how bad lefties are at maths, right? Somebody, and I'm not talking about a random person, it was on an American TV programme on CNBC or whatever.
Oh, not CBeebies?
No. It wasn't CBeebies. CBeebies would have been more sensible, to be quite frank. This bloke, who was an anchor, said...
He's a what?
Yeah, he was. he said there are... There are people in America that have $200 billion, and there are only 7 billion people in the world. If we gave every person $1 billion, they'd still have $197 billion left.
Oh,
yeah.
No.
Well, apart from the fact that your maths is well dodgy, and in fact. Those 7 billion people would have got $1.50, yeah, if you actually do the arithmetic with a calculator. The fact is that all this redistribution nonsense is people that are incredibly wealthy don't earn £1 billion a year. They have £1 billion worth of assets, and most of those assets are businesses. Mm. If you want to take the money off them, they've got to sell their business. And in order to sell their business, they've got to sell it to someone. That also, so you've not created an extra £1 billion, all you've done is moved it.
Well, people forget, I mean, I've never forgotten that the tweet, Alan Sugar paying his tax bill 1 year, and he actually wrote the cheque, payable to HMRC, £12 million pounds that Alan Sugar wrote in tax in 1 year. Now, I don't know what the makeup was, I don't know if it's a special year or that's what he always pays. Clearly, he made a lot of money, but nevertheless, £12 million of this freeloading what's it that everybody gets very cross about, £12 million going back to the Exchequer to pay Universal Credit and for the health service and other things. You know, and it does make me slightly cross.
I'm going to come back to talk to you about what I want to, but while we're on a bit of a rant, this is my other big bugbear at the moment. There's a meme going around on Twitter about the footballer Marcus Rashford. The young lad is the guy that's been pushing the government to provide free school meals.
Yeah.
And everybody gets angry with him because he earns so much money. Yeah. And there's a meme going around that says Marcus Rashford has his own company called Mux, M-U-C-S. And what he's doing with it, and this is what the meme says. The meme says he paid himself £4,750 for it. In 1 year, and then borrowed £900,000. And the meme says that's just tax avoidance. And the problem with it is that they're wrong on every single count. One, he's a professional footballer, and the rules of professional football are every professional footballer in the United Kingdom is paid PAYE.
Mm.
Yeah? So he actually paid £4.5 million in tax and national insurance last year. Yeah.
On PAYE. Never mind his endorsements, which probably do go to his limited company.
Yeah, but his limited company, where they got the thing that made me laugh about this is they all go, he's got an offshore company, and here it is. No, that's his company at Companies House, which is in the UK. It's not an offshore company.
It says registered in England at the bottom of his notepaper.
Yeah, exactly. And also it says he paid himself £4,500, and that was all he paid tax on. Well, actually, he didn't pay tax on that at all, because this is from 2017, when 5,000 was the tax-free limit for a dividend payment, yeah, which is now £2,000. Yeah, so it was a dividend, and he didn't pay any tax on it at all. And as for the director's loan, that is no more tax-efficient than anything else, because you have to pay it back with interest, and you have to pay it back within 9 months, otherwise you're served to Section 455 and pay tax at 35%. So the whole meme is cobblers, but it shows you how few people understand business, tax and money. And it drives me potty.
It is one of my personal bugbears that the Hong Kong tax statute is probably 100 sides of paper. I've forgotten the numbers, so I'm making these up, but you get the idea. It's a relatively modest booklet.
Mm-hmm.
The UK tax guide, you can put a piece of paper on the floor and it piles to the ceiling.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you can say it's to avoid fraud and a lot of it probably is, But the problem is, it's just so incredibly complicated. And it doesn't need to be. But no. It's grown up over 250 years. And we've got an absolute nightmare of a system that needs completely rewriting.
And that's the problem. And even tax lawyers and tax accountants and tax specialists don't understand. You know, if you ask them, they go, we think so and so and so and so. But unless it goes to court, you can't actually prove it.
A client of mine is trying to sell a house that was marginally complicated. Dad left the house in trust when he died. Mother was a right to live there for the whole of her lifetime, and then it passed to the six children. I think there was a slightly complicated family arrangement, and Dad wanted to make sure that his six children got it in the end. But for a period of time, Mum lived there, then one of the sons lived there, and we're trying to work out what the capital gains tax position is on this house, because in theory, if it's not somebody's main residence, the increase in value, while it's not been somebody's main residence, is assessed to capital gains tax, and there's a tax bill to pay. Well, it was the mum's prime residence, even though it was in a trust, probably exempt, but we're not certain.
Yeah.
And then it was one of the son's prime residence, probably exempt, but we're not absolutely certain. And because it's a trust, we've had to seek an opinion, and we're paying £1,000 just to find out whether or not there might be a
you
tax
have to pay
bill
tax on it. Yeah.
Because we're not sure. And I mean, we do this stuff for a living, and we're not sure. We've had to put it out to a tax specialist. It's just a nightmare.
Yeah, and that's the problem, isn't it, with all of those kind of things, is that we add to our laws, we never take them away.
No.
And we never reassess them.
No.
But let's come back to the kind of things that I wanted to talk to you about, which is the small business angle on this. And we had loads of bounce-back loans and bank loans of all kinds to support some businesses, because you've got the 3 million excluded. We won't talk about them at all at the moment. But those limited companies that took bounce back loans, my view on this is that you've got the perfect storm about to unfold, because as we've unlocked and started to get back to some kind of normality and businesses have started to return to doing work, we've had 18 months probably with no income streams or very little income streams and very little work. So people are starting from scratch again, except they're not starting from scratch. They've got big debts to pay. And now it looks like we're going to have a budget that's going to put everything up. I mean, corporation tax is certainly going up.
Well, that's already gone up. It's already been announced. It was announced last year. So it's up to 25%, which is a huge rise from 19.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I agree with Biden. It should be 15 across the board, shouldn't it, really?
It would be nice. But there's a very interesting debate about whether you should be a sole trader or a limited company, which we might get back to later.
Absolutely.
Do you know the show's only 2 hours long? We've only got half an hour left.
Yeah, well,
just saying.
But so for me, looking at this, you've got that. We're talking about upping the minimum wage to £9.50 an hour. And again, one of the things, I don't have a problem with paying people decent wages. I have no problem with that. And it doesn't particularly affect me because I don't have anyone at that lower wage.
Yeah.
But the reality is that it's not £9.51 an hour. Yeah, it's not £19,000 a year. An employer on that is actually paying £23,000.
Because he's got to pay the extra national insurance.
Because he's got to pay national insurance, he's got to pay workplace pension and, you know, holiday money.
Yeah.
So the cost to the employer isn't £9.51 an hour, it's more like £11.51 an hour.
Yeah.
And if you've got I own a coffee shop, so you, as long as you're happy to pay 12 quid for a cup of coffee, I'm happy to pay, 11 quid an hour for someone to serve it to you. But my point is, you've got all of those things happening at a time when small businesses have got more debt than ever, and they took the debt on without the normal caveats of, can you afford the debt?
Well, because there was a government guarantee.
Yeah, exactly.
And so the interesting bit will be how many of these companies go bust, the loan falls back on the government, and then the company pops up somewhere else and starts again. And that is an unexplored issue. We shall have to wait and see.
Absolutely. But for me, looking at it, I can only see that happening on a massive scale, because I can't see any other way out of it, to be honest.
Well, it will be interesting. I mean, you're quite possibly right. I'm an eternal optimist. I mean, financial services was one of the businesses that didn't necessarily need to get hit during lockdown.
Yeah.
So one of the things you said you were going to ask me about was, how's it gone for Thales?
Yeah.
And the answer is, we've had a really good lockdown. And I'm almost embarrassed to say that, because I'm very conscious that so many people with all sorts of businesses, from coffee shops to websites to you name it, they've had all sorts of problems.
Yeah.
We were very fortunate. People still needed our services. Actually, people wanted to come. They had this period of lockdown where they had to contemplate their personal survival. We got phoned up. I got time to do the personal stuff that I never got time to do when I'm at work. Might as well talk to a financial advisor. And as a business, we stayed open.
Right.
So all our staff nearly all our staff were working from home. We put IP phones in, which was on the list. We hadn't got to it. We just brought them in and put them in straight away. So people were able to answer the phone from home when it rang in the office.
Yep.
And we were able to communicate using Microsoft Teams across the whole business. So all the advisors had that. And we were able to have video calls and have these conversations. And did the same with client meetings. And we found a number of our peers decided that they couldn't trade in a lockdown.
Yeah.
And they closed, and they shut down.
Yeah.
So all the recruitment agencies that are offering companies financial advisors are going, well, nobody's taking financial advisors. We said, we are. And we entered lockdown with 20 people in the business. We come out with 32.
Wow.
And, yeah, and so it's been really interesting. We're looking after £100 million of client money. Returns are really quite good. Life is looking pretty good.
But
it's all about what happens in your head.
Yeah.
We decided we were going to stay open. We were going to carry on trading. We were going to make our staff work. Encourage them to find a way of making it happen.
Yeah.
We didn't have to furlough anybody. We were going to recruit, and we did. We hired three people we never met face-to-face.
Right.
We did the references. We had their professional exam certificates. We had their all the stuff that you need. We gave them competency assessments, and we interviewed them on Teams.
Wow.
And then we hired them on Teams, and they've worked out really, really well. So we just decided we weren't going to let it beat us, and we got lucky. Now, you know, there's a lot of businesses. If you're in a hotel, you can't open.
There's nothing.
If you're in a pub, you can't open. If you're in a restaurant, you can't open. Your business is dead.
Yep.
And these are the people that are really, really going to get hurt, and well, have been hurt, and it's going to be really hard for them to come back. And I just hope that they can. I really do.
It's we live in very strange times,
don't we? Just
for us at Jobs in Kent, the problem we had during lockdown is no one was hiring.
Yeah.
Apart from you. And you weren't enough to keep us going. You know, everybody just pulled their adverts because they weren't hiring. The funny thing now is we have in totally the opposite problem right now. We have loads of jobs and no one applying for them.
Yeah, we have the same problem. We need administrators right now in Thales. If you're a financial services administrator listening to us, give me a call after the show. We're hiring now.
Right.
But it's actually really hard to find. I think a lot of people are very nervous that they're going to be last in, first out if there's another dip come Christmas. So a lot of people are sitting very tight on the fence, just saying, if it goes wrong, I might get caught. I'm going to stay where I am.
Literally, furlough's just finished. Yeah. So you got your last furlough payment this month.
Yeah.
That is when the proverbial doo-doo will start to hit the fan.
Yeah.
Because that's when you find out about all the redundancies that are going to happen. And as you quite rightly say, Simon, a lot of people are going to hang on for their redundancy money first.
Yeah.
You know, why jump ship if I'm going to get paid to be fired, on the one hand? And those that don't think they're going to be made redundant are going, do you know what? I don't want to leave and be first in, first out.
Yeah.
Last in, first out. Yeah. So I'm going to hang on where I am. So there's no movement in the job market at all. And we already have massive structural shortages. You know, we've all seen with, you know, HGV drivers. But you know, even that, you know, again, there's some too many myths about that. I did a television program for the BBC in 2015 about driver shortages. Yeah.
Really?
Yeah, really.
It's been structural for a while then.
It's been structural for a long while. The reason that it came about was with, I don't know if you remember, we had Operation Stack in 2015.
Remember, I lived in Kent.
Exactly.
It was a nightmare.
Yeah.
That's when I bought my motorbike.
Absolutely. And one of the problems with that was that, you know, the Road Haulage Association were heavily involved in it. And one of the things that came out of that was how we had so little truck stops and stuff like that, and why people were leaving the driving industry because there were no truck stops. There are no places facilities. To park. There's no facilities in this country.
Disrespected.
Yeah, yeah. They were earning £10 an hour and they didn't want to do it. And, of course, what's happened we've become a delivery-based nation.
Yeah, we have. Yeah.
In 2013, there were 299,000 people employed in driving jobs in the United Kingdom. In 2019, there were 698,000 people employed in driving jobs in the United Kingdom. Now, they're not HGV driving jobs. They're Amazon and, you know, yep. Hermes and DPD. But HGV drivers were paid £11 an hour, £12 an hour, and Amazon drivers were paid £11 an hour. Yeah, so you can drive an HGV truck with all the hassle that that's involved in, or you can drive a transit van.
And the latest one that's come out of this is now that the market has reacted and HGV drivers are getting golden hellos and a much higher hourly rate, there's now a massive shortage of bus drivers because they've got a public service vehicle license. The transition to get HGV3 or HGV2 or even HGV1 is significantly smaller, and they're getting double their money.
Yeah.
So I can drive all day. I can drive one sort of vehicle and get paid $40,000 a year. I can drive another sort of vehicle and get paid $18,000 a year and deal with annoying urbits on the bus from school who are just giving me a hard time. I think I'd rather sit in my cab and be isolated from it all.
Absolutely. So, you know, all these things, nothing ever happens in isolation. And, you know, we must stop reacting to things in ways that we think that we know what's going on when we don't. And these things, a lot of these structural problems have been going on for a long time.
Yes, they have.
And have just got worse. You know, same in construction. We haven't been training apprentices in the construction industry for a long, long time. So we've got shortages in construction. Of course, hospitality and the care industry have suffered enormously all the way through. But for me, you've got the perfect storm unfolding. You've got wage rises across the board happening.
Yeah.
You know, a massive hike, 6.6% in the minimum wage. There's a national insurance rise due as well. Mm-hmm. Employers' national insurance is due to rise. You've got massive debts. And all I can see is trouble out of all of this for small businesses. You know, bigger firms can probably ride it out, but the smaller firms are really going to suffer.
I'm not sure. I think there's problems for everybody across the board. I mean, I think the expression, we're all in this together, has never been truer.
Right.
Clearly, there's going to be 2% at the top who are insulated by their money.
Yeah.
And it doesn't matter what happens, they'll always be okay. And probably more than the top 2%. I mean, a lot of retired people have got very decent pensions. A bit of inflation is actually really good because they've got inflation-linked pensions and they're going to be even better off. But that's a relatively modest number. The rest of us that are still working for a living and trying to run a business and trying to generate sales or paying tax or needing benefits, all of that's going to be under pressure because there's going to be inflation, hopefully not significant and hopefully not for long, but we're talking about 4 or 5% in the next 6 months. That's going to be a big deal.
Yeah.
And effectively, that minimum wage will not be sufficient just to keep up with inflation. So it's going to be very interesting to see what happens.
That's the problem. It's always the problem, isn't it?
It's a spiral.
Yeah, you get this upward spiral all the time, and people just never seem to be able to work this out. That the more you pay, the more the prices go up, so the less value you have. It's for the last moment or so, Simon, I want you to do an advert for Titleist, for Titleist IFA. Just tell us what it is you do as a firm and why we should put our money into our pension funds.
Well, they did some statistics recently, nothing to do with Titleist, but everything to do with financial services, and they said that the average advised client was £47,000 better off over a period. I can't even remember the period, but than somebody who wasn't.
Right.
So effectively, they've done stats that actually prove empirically with numbers that people are physically better off because they get advice. You will know this. I'm going to ask Amanda as a punter on the street. What's the highest rate of tax, income tax, in the UK?
I don't know.
Well, most people say who don't know say 40%. It's actually 60%, and it applies an income between 50 and 60,000 if you're a married man and you lose child, well, if you've got children and you lose child benefit, or an income between 100 and 125,000 when you lose personal allowance. And so you've got two big chunks of tax there, and the easy answer is make a pension contribution and all of a sudden you don't pay that tax and you get tax relief at 60%.
Yeah.
Now, there's all sorts of stupid things like that because of our very complicated system that the average person hasn't got a snowball's chance in hell of finding out for themselves. And that's where people like me add value, which is why we've got £100 million of other people's money to look after, most of which, Paul, Is yours?
Yeah, I wish.
No, I wish.
Then you get some really nice gifts.
Exactly. Yeah. You know, those gifts of Christmas.
Simon, thanks for that. Give us a shout for your website at Talis so that people can come and check you out.
www.talisifa.com. Talisifa.com.
There's a link to that on the Business Bunker website, and that will be there forever, so do check that out. Simon, it's been an absolute pleasure to chat with you about all this and to have our various rants about all of this stuff going on. We live in interesting times.
Oh, yes.
It's going to be very interesting to see how things unfold for the next few months and years, probably. But for the moment, Simon, thank you so much.
It's been a pleasure. Thanks for having me. It's nice to see you.
Pleasure.
And you, Amanda.
Yeah, you too.
Amanda, you can read one email and then I'm going to do the FSB news.
Well, first of all, I do have to mention that we have had a GIF from the lovely Lisa Settle at Telcare Limited, but it's a scary one.
Right.
It's a clown. It's the clown from It, and I hate clowns.
Right.
So, thanks for that, Lisa. Scared them out of me. But keep those GIFs coming in.
Oh, I've seen it, yeah.
See
it,
the scary clown.
Yeah.
Very scary.
It's a special word for being afraid of clowns. I'm trying to think what it is.
Clownophobic?
No, it's coulrophobia. C-O-U-L-R-O phobia.
Coulrophobia.
Fear of clowns. I only know that through the magic of Google, but I knew the word existed and I looked it up.
I just don't like them.
No.
She never watched It when I was a child. Home is a feeling. A new type of exhibition in Faversham. Home is a Feeling is an art exhibition showcasing the works of 30 Kent-based artists, makers and designers presented in a room transformed into a living space. It will open to the public at the Alexander in Faversham on Saturday the 13th and Sunday the 14th of November 2021. Home is a Feeling breaks down barriers and makes art more accessible, showing it as part of everyday life. With furniture, paintings, ceramics, tableware, soft furnishings, jewellery, etc., the exhibition will highlight how much art and design we have in our homes. Curator Nathalie Benaigne, I can't say her name properly, sorry, Nathalie.
Nathalie Benaigne.
Benaigne, thank you, says, we are surrounded by art in our everyday life and yet many people do not realise how much there is and what a big impact it has on our environment and on our mood. This show is meant to make visitors realise what art and design look like and feel like in the home. Home is a Feeling is on Saturday 13th, Sunday the 14th of November, 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. at the Alexander Centre in Faversham.
Oh, fantastic. Right. Good. You've got a little helper at home. Bear's doing the hoovering.
Yay.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah.
You get the younger child to do it because the older child won't go near the hoover.
Yeah.
What's that? It's a hoover.
Right. It's now time for the FSB News.
The Federation of Small Businesses News Roundup. Offering advice and guidance for small businesses and the self-employed.
Entries are now open.
The Business Bunker with Paul Andrews.
Sorry about that. Entries are now open for the Celebrating Small Business Awards 2022. We're celebrating the achievements, successes and resilience of small businesses and the self-employed across the UK, and you're invited. Whether you're shortlisted for one of 12 local awards or make it all the way to the spectacular UK final, it's time to put your business in the spotlight and show us what you're made of. It's free to enter, so what are you waiting for? If you go to www.fsbawards.co.uk, you can find out all about it and nominate your business for one of the local or national awards. The FSB Kent and Medway is delighted to support the Kent Business Summit 2022. This will be held on the 14th of January, bringing together some 300 businesses, key policymakers, and leading academics. This will be the fifth annual summit, and it has a clear emphasis on business opportunity and sustainability, with the latest news from key projects alongside expert keynote speakers. Confirmed speakers so far include the leaders of Kent County Council, Medway Council and Bank of England, providing up-to-the-minute overviews of key regional activity and economic insights. I'm going to give you a booking link for all these things that I'm going to read out at the end of me reading them out, so hold on for that. There's a Q&A breakfast meeting with Sir Roger Gale, who's the MP for North Thanet, and that's taking place on Friday the 5th of November, 8am to 9am. It's an online meeting. This will be a great opportunity to hear more about his priorities for North Thanet and to pose any questions you may have in relation to how the government plans to support our small businesses going forward. There's also a Q&A this Friday with Damien Green, the MP for Ashford.
I like Damien. He's very good news. He's our local MP.
Cool. So you can have a chat with him. I think it's this Friday. Yes, it is. I'll give you the link for all of these in a moment. There's a property and construction event, tax savings for developers and those considering developments, taking place on Thursday the 11th of November, 8am to 9am. At this event, we'll focus on tax savings for developers and those considering developments. There's the FSB Small Business Virtual Conference, The Journey to Net Zero, on Tuesday the 2nd of November, 10am to 3:30pm. At the COP26 Climate Talks will soon take place in the UK. We have the perfect opportunity to explore the significant role small businesses will urgently play in the transition to net zero. Join us for this cutting-edge FSB conference to find out what it all means and what's in it for you. There's Kent Women in Enterprise virtual networking on Thursday the 11th of November, 11:15am to 12:30pm. At this event, we'll be discussing all things branding and marketing with Amwen Cooper of Get Fruitful Marketing. Amwen has over 20 years marketing experience and will be sharing with us her presentation, Thinking Bigger, How to Increase Your Income and Impact Through More Fruitful Marketing. Then on Wednesday the 3rd of November, 12:30pm to 1:30pm, How to Boost Your Time, Health and Business Through Your Energy Management. Busy business owners often put themselves off, work incredibly long hours and neglect their health. The solution to this is to learn to work your business and tasks to your energy management, not the clock, and learn how to prioritise your health. In this webinar, life and business coach Alice Dartner will discuss why time management has nothing to do with time. It's actually about your energy management.
Well, there you go.
There you go. Creative Insights for Virtual Marketing on Tuesday the 9th of November, 1pm to 2:30pm. In conjunction with York Business Week, Jackie Bork, Head of Creative Insights at iStock Getty Images, will explain how to ensure that the visual images your business presents are the right ones. On Wednesday the 17th of November, 10am till 11am, networking. Let's talk technical. You're invited to a new virtual networking group focusing on small businesses in the engineering, manufacturing and transport sectors. This is a national network designed to grow your contacts within this sector and to give you the opportunity to discuss topics important to you. That's everything. Yeah, just to re-emphasise
that... They do a lot, the FSB. There's an awful lot in there.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's just over the next couple of weeks. That's incredible.
Yeah, and they have these all the time, and they're doing more and more. They're keeping a lot of the things that they did online. Yeah,
well, even a good idea.
Yeah, there are some physical meetings, but they discovered that the online meetings have a broader scope and are easier to attend. Absolutely.
Getting to stuff and parking to attend is a real pain sometimes.
Exactly, yeah. Just to re-emphasise, because I couldn't find it, but I've now found it, there's a Q&A breakfast meeting with Damien Green, the MP for Ashford, on Friday the 29th of October, so that is this Friday, 8am to 9am. Discuss what is needed for your business success in Ashford. All of those events that I've just read out, you can find more detail about them, plus the booking links for all of them, if you go to kentbusinessradio.co.uk/FSB.
Oh, there you go.
Thanks
for doing that, Paul. That's very helpful.
Cool.
We've got some very scary gifts coming in now.
Have you?
Now they're coming in.
Can you describe them to me, Amanda?
Well, we have one from Gemma, which looks like another scary clown, even though I've said no clowns, I don't like clowns. And then that's from Gemma Fairclough-Haynes of Orchard Employment Law. And we've had one from FSB Insurance.
I've just seen that, Trick or Treat. That made me jump.
Yes.
Exactly. Well,
we're
find
not going
Gemma's
to describe
one.
That on the radio. You can go and find it.
It's a ghost, Simon.
Oh, I don't like Emma. I don't like Gemma's one. That's horrible, that is. Yeah.
That's really scary.
Have you got your treats in for Trick or Treat this weekend?
I'm very lucky. Well, I say very lucky. We live in a very small village where the average age is about 74. and I think there's about three children in the whole village, so I think we probably won't get much trick-or-treating in our
Not going out as a big kid then.
No. Well, if I show up asking for trick or treat, people would call the police, I think.
Yeah. Well, we're having a Halloween party, aren't we?
We are having a Halloween party.
Yeah, for the kids and me.
I'm glad you said for the kids, because I was going to say, because you haven't invited me. I was very sad, but I'm not a kid.
Treat or six. Yes, no, we're doing lots of different games, like the treat hunt, and we're going to have the blindfold challenge, where we're going to have buckets of different gooey things for them to put their hands in.
Apple bobbin.
Pin the hat on the witch.
Yep.
Okay, yeah, so yeah, very active.
That sounds good. Honey. How many have you got coming?
Don't know. Lost count.
A few then.
Yeah. That shouldn't be too bad. There's only about 10, I think.
All I would say is I had two grandchildren for the weekend a little while ago, aged 6 months and 3. We had them on our own, and by the end of the weekend, the wife and I were nearly dead. It's the reason that only young people have children. I was just so exhausted. It really took us out. Yeah, Paul's laughing. I don't know why you're laughing, mate. Leave me in.
To all our supporters, volunteers and businesses we support and your families, dust off your hiking boots and help us raise some money in partnership with the Wealden Business Group. And they're raising money for the Kent Foundation. Help us raise much-needed funds for the Kent Foundation, who are the Wealden Business Group's chosen charity for 2021-22, by joining us on a walk and getting sponsorship from friends, family and clients. Or simply sponsor us if you don't fancy walking. You can find out all about this campaign by going to justgiving.com/campaign/the Kent Foundation.
There you go. Beacon Plus adults with learning disabilities open new community cafe and bakery in Folkestone. With just 6% of adults with learning disabilities nationally finding paid employment, support for these young people making the transition from education to work is more vital than ever. To help those making this leap, the Beacon Plus program has opened.
It's easy for you to say.
Well, exactly. Has opened a new cafe where young adults from across East Kent can develop the skills and confidence to succeed. Tontine Street and Dover Road opposite F51 Skate Park in Folkestone. One is welcomed by the sights and sounds common to any thriving town centre cafe. All the staff running this community cafe are young people with learning disabilities aged 19 to 25 who are gaining vital experience as they seek to find their way into work after leaving full-time education. So there you go. If you're around that area, go and give them some support, I think.
Fantastic.
There's a lot happening in Folkestone. Have you been to Folkestone recently? It's a serious question. They have done so much to raise the level. There's a whole new hill that's lots of artisan shops and restaurants and bits and pieces. It's really very good news.
Absolutely, yeah. It really has come along.
And the Harbour Arm has added a lot. That was all close to lockdown, but that's going to reopen next summer.
Absolutely. I mean, one of the things, to be fair, that has improved Folkestone's lot is that they're now part of the high-speed network. Rail network, and that has made things a huge amount of difference. It's because it's a lovely place. There's some gorgeous buildings in Folkestone. Yeah.
Well, the two things that really helped Folkestone. The first one was Saga, and then the second was Roger Johann after he sold Saga, because he's really reinvested back in the town, and that's made a huge difference.
Absolutely.
In the town.
Yeah. There are marketing grants from the Marketing Meetup, and they're offering grants and marketing support to small businesses. If you want to find out more about this scheme, if you go to the marketingmeetup.com/positivelylovelygrants.
Oh.
There you go. And there's a free 2-month trial of electric vans. Kent County Council are receiving funding to offer free 2-month electric van trials to small businesses in Kent. To find out more, visit the website greenbusinesshub.eco/greenbusinesscommunity. That's greenbusinesshub.eco/greenbusinesscommunity. So basically, you get an electric van. I think they're 500 weight type vans.
And you get to run it.
And you get to run it for 2 months.
I tell you what, I bet the people who had electric vans were laughing their heads off in the petrol crisis.
I mean,
that was the time. That was the time to be
electric.
We're
going to go, I don't
need petrol, I've just got an electric van.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, that was another one. That was a laugh, that was.
Yeah, don't get me started. I tell you what, Paul, it's really dangerous having you and I back on the radio.
I know.
We can stop. Just sound like two angry old men.
Yeah. Stadler and Waldorf.
Old men or something. Yeah.
Thank you for that.
We're on sabbatical from the Muppets.
Yeah, exactly.
We'll be back in our box next week.
Work is underway on a £15 million investment to create a world-class business park aiming to attract leading technology and science firms. The Innovation Park Medway project is said to be a key part of boosting the economy in the towns, providing scores of highly skilled jobs and opportunities for training when it opens at Rochester Airport. Split across two phases, either side of the runway, the 24.7-acre site is set to be home to 34 plots offering state-of-the-art facilities for research and development. The development is one of the main projects led by Medway Council as part of its regeneration plans for the area, which also include redevelopment plans for Chatham Town Centre, more than 10,000 homes on the Hugh Peninsula, and a £418 million development along the riverside of Rochester. So, you know, you're saying about, you know, problems with money. Somebody's obviously got some.
Oh, somebody's got some money.
These councils seem to have it. £418 million development. Well, what was the other one?
They did the development and then they get the rates in, which is what they need. They need rates income, and that's a very good way of getting it.
Yeah.
But, I mean, these parks are the future. The old Pfizer site down at Sandwich.
Yeah, Discovery Park.
That was going to close, and they've just filled it with this type of business, and it's now a very successful development. Yeah. And it was, I mean, you know, 50 million was a tax write off for Pfizer, or they acquired more plant when they acquired another business and they didn't need it anymore.
Absolutely,
it's incredible.
We've reached the end of the show.
Look at that.
Yeah, you can join me on Thursday for the Business Bunker Extra Show, where my guest is Rachel Gotto. You can find all about that by going to bizradio.co.uk and look us up there. We'll be on at 1 o'clock on Thursday. But I want to say a massive thank you to Caroline Purvey of Total Release Experience, to Simon Webster of Talis IFA, to my gorgeous co-host Amanda Flanders. Thank you so much for joining us. We'll be back next week.
Bye-bye.
Bye for now.
Bye.
The Business Bunker with Paul Andrews.
This is Channel 2.